vivo qualitative data analysis software empowers researchers around the world to discover rich insights within their qualitative data. This podcast gives you unique insights into the methods, the processes, and the passions of researchers. Welcome to the Invivo podcast, Between the Data.
Welcome to the Invivo podcast, Between the Data. I'm Stacey Penna, the Marketing Partnership and Strategy Senior Director here at Lumavero. Today's podcast is our second interview with Dr. Sanna Jansen, Senior Lecturer at the University of Strathclyde, who was the winner of the 2022 Lumavero Early Career Researchers Grant, which awarded $25,000 over 2 years for her study. So we wanted to follow up with the progress of the study. And so welcome, Sanna. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Stacey. Nice to speak to you again.
So can you give us an overview of your research project and, you know, why did you pick the topic? What are some of your research methods too?
Yeah, so my project called Building Better Days is looking at 24-hour movement behaviors. So that is physical activity, sedentary behavior, and sleep in the under fives. So these behaviors are crucial for the health and development of young children. And the World Health Organization developed international guidelines for the 24-hour movement behaviors, which state that children should be active for at least 3 hours a day, spend less than an hour or so on screen time, and sleep between 10 to 13 hours a day. Now, what we found from previous studies is that actually this isn't happening. So kids aren't necessarily active enough, even though we always think they are active enough. They spend, even at a young age, a fair bit of time on the screens. And in some countries, their sleep is impacted as well. So that's why I decided to then conduct the Better Days study, just to gain a better understanding of what are the barriers and facilitators to these behaviors, and especially in those living in deprived areas. Because another thing we found was that if we look at obesity rates are much higher in those children living in deprived areas compared to those in the more wealthy areas. So we thought, let's have a look at that population. And the way we planned to do that was by firstly measuring how active are these kids actually, how much time do they spend on screen time, and how much do they sleep, using a small device, which looks like a pedometer, but it's a bit more advanced than that. And then use that information to feed into online discussion groups where we talk to parents about what they experience, how active they think their children are, but also what barriers and facilitators they see in their daily life.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the recap. So for your grant application, one reason you were chosen was for the innovative research design you had. And one piece of that being that you had children participants were asked to wear an actigraph accelerometer, I think I said that right, to measure physical activity, sedentary behavior, and sleep. So what were the results of using that type of technology?
Yeah, so what we found in our current study, and that's in our sample, most children did actually meet the sleep guidelines, so they did get sufficient sleep, 10 to 13 hours. Unfortunately, we can't measure the quality of sleep with the device we have, and that's obviously also very important, but when it came to duration, they were meeting the sleep guidelines, as it is the majority of them. But what we also saw that at least half of them didn't meet the physical activity guidelines, so they weren't active for 3 hours per day. And the majority, and that's the vast majority, didn't meet the screen time guidelines of less than 60 minutes per day. Now, we do have to acknowledge this was a small sample, and the main purpose for us collecting that data was to feed into a qualitative analysis. So we can't necessarily generalize these results into the wider population. However, what is noticeable is that these results don't stand out compared to the rest of the literature. So they're very much in line. So it's quite clear that there is a problem, especially around screen time, physical activity in young kids.
Mm-hmm. And were there any challenges with having the children wear them? Like with that, because, you know, kids at 4 to 5 year olds, you know, are squirmy. So did you find anything like that?
Yeah. So definitely you see differences between kids. Some kids really embrace it and they love it because it's this thing that makes them special and they love running around with it. Others perhaps needed a bit more convincing, but the parents involved in the study, I have to give it to them, they've been pretty good and pretty persistent in trying to encourage them. So we did get some dropout in, like, some kids didn't wear it, but the majority did wear it.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's not easy for parents either.
No, I felt a bit bad asking them.
Yeah, but then at the same point, I guess as a parent, it would be interesting also to see what was happening. So
that's something that the feedback from the parents was that they really enjoyed getting these visualizations that we create, because it tells them a bit more about what happens even when the kids are not with them. They might be in childcare, like what happens on a day like.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks.
This podcast is sponsored by Lumavero, developers of Invivo and other software designed by and for data experts to illuminate powerful new insights. You can find the 2024 Lumavero Early Career Researcher Grant application on the Lumavero website under Resources from March 14th to July 31st, 2024.
So how did you analyze your data? Because you had both quantitative and qualitative data.
Yeah, so initially the quantitative data, we just analyzed descriptively. So we looked at the levels of the behaviors on each day. And that's how we created then day-by-day visualizations that parents would receive from us. And then for the qualitative analysis, we initially used Brown and Clark's thematic approach. So we analyzed it that way. And then we mapped our findings first onto ecological frameworks, which looks at the individual characteristics, the environmental characteristics, interpersonal relationships. So you can think about the family context as well as policy. So we found that our results mapped onto that really nicely. So that's what we did. And on top of that, we then looked at, and that's where the qualitative comes into the quantitative, we looked at whether or not those that met the guidelines showed different barriers, facilitators, themes compared to those that weren't meeting the guidelines. So that's how we merged the two together. So now we're still looking into that, and that's a bit more work. So
great. Because this was a Lumavero grant, one of the criteria was that you would use one of our softwares. And in this case, it was Invivo to help you with your analysis. So can you talk a little bit of how you use Invivo to analyze your data?
Yeah, Invivo has been a huge help, actually. It's made life a lot easier. First, for what most people think use Invivo or know Invivo for, which is the coding. It makes it super simple to keep track of all your coding and to narrow it all down following Brown and Clark's approach. But something that I definitely learned and wasn't quite aware of when I started using Invivo was the functionality of like being able to create cases. So for us, that was really useful when we were working with those that met the guidelines versus those that didn't meet the guidelines, being able to categorize them that way and then asking Invivo, okay, now show me what's coming out in each of these groups has been super helpful. And I think, was it not for Invivo, it would have been tricky to do.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Like one of the strengths of Invivo is being able to do like a query, like a matrix coding query, probably to compare those two groups and see the differences, because then you have like a visual chart or a table that I found when I used it like that, that really stood out with your findings that you could talk to too.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think you mentioned some of these, but can you tell us what your findings were, you know, both quantitatively and qualitatively?
Yeah, I did mention the quantitative ones. So the main points in regards to quantitative was very much that children were not necessarily meeting the physical activity guidelines and were not definitely not meeting the screen guidelines of 60 minutes per day maximum. So we saw that a lot of the kids at a young age are engaging with screens for quite a while per day. Our qualitative findings, on the other hand, showed that's where we tried to figure out why is it that they are relying on screens and why are they not as active? So what parents were raising was there was a lot around financial resources, which in this population is obviously not a huge surprise, especially at this point in time. So even though if there was activities available, think indoor play, think swimming pools, they were quite expensive to go to. So parents couldn't necessarily take them there, which again, in Scotland as well, is quite a big issue because we've got so much bad weather that people are looking for indoor activities. But then if these indoor activities are too expensive, then they're quite limited. What we also found was that the parent perceptions of the behaviors made an influence. So a lot of the parents actually knew about sleep and valued sleep. And what we saw is obviously a lot of the kids meeting the sleep guidelines. But when we talked about screen, they didn't necessarily see the risks of children engaging in screens. So we're not 100% sure if that's the correlation, but there is definitely something there that parents don't seem to think screens are necessarily bad for their kids. They see them as educational in a way. So that's something that came out of there. Family demands were a big thing. So if people had double jobs or multiple kids, then they would struggle to actually engage with the little ones and keep them active. And that ties into what we also saw with parent influence. So we saw some parents were gamers themselves. So again, that's been said, not necessarily seen as something bad. They saw it as something that they did with the family. And where others were very active, engaged in sports, so their kids would be on the sidelines seeing that positive influence in a way. So that was interesting. But what parents also were highlighting was the role the government and policies play in creating awareness and ensuring that families have the time and the resource. So people working two jobs or even a family working full time, both parents working full time, it becomes quite hard to find the time to then also make sure your kid is active. There was other parents that mentioned nurseries not necessarily taking children outside in bad weather. So there's a policy influence there. If that's not put in policy and you've got nursery teachers that don't see the importance of these behaviors, they might choose to stay inside, and that means a child is not active that day, basically. So there was a lot of talk around, like, yeah, policy influence, government influence, ensuring that parents had the opportunity to actually do what they want to do. As for the differences between those meeting and not meeting the guidelines, we're still kind of looking into what we find there. At the moment, it doesn't look at us that much difference. They all seem to be aware of the different barriers, but I want to delve in there deeper to see how others cope with that. Even though they see these barriers, how do they overcome them?
Yeah, that was interesting because I watched your presentation from the Lumavero conference in September. And so you already had some findings, but you probably even have more now from that time. So thank you. So your goal in using asynchronous remote communities method, which is ARC, was to involve hard to reach populations like your participants. Did this design help you achieve the goal, do you think? And maybe describe it a little bit more for people listening, the method.
Yeah, so the ARC, Asynchronous Remote Communities Method, basically the way you can look at it is it's a focus group approach, but it's asynchronous. That means people can add their opinions and then add to the discussions in their own time. So we ran it online media platform so people could log in and whenever it suits them, they could add to whatever discussion topic we put up there. So I definitely think it helped, but that doesn't take away it was still really hard to reach these participants. So I think that was the hardest part of our study was actually the recruitment. So we started with online and nationwide recruitment with the help of Early Years Scotland. So they actually had an event on just at the time that we started. So they had all these flyers that they handed out to their community, their stakeholders. But we realized fairly quickly that it was face-to-face information sessions in the preschools and the nurseries that were actually the most appropriate way to recruit. People like to see your face, I think. And also it means you can actually talk about the importance of it a bit more than just online or just the flyers. So we did still struggle a little bit with recruitment, but what we did get back from the participants that did participate and engaged with this method was that they did appreciate that they could interact whenever they wanted. So if the child went to bed and they had a bit of time, that's when they often would come on and give us their opinion. So definitely a method, I think definitely a method to consider for anyone wanting to reach harder to reach population, but not necessarily just harder to reach populations. I think any family is quite busy. So I think it's a way to kind of circumvent, get around that. Yeah, for sure.
We'll take a short break from the podcast. To learn more about Dr. Jansen's research, visit the University of Strathclyde's website.
I agree with you. I think now people are pretty used to doing online methods, especially after COVID. So probably more comfortable than they would have been a few years ago. So what recommendations would you suggest to help families meet the World Health Organization's guidelines? Because that was part of what you were looking at, right? With what you were working with the children on.
Yeah, so first, I find it very hard to tell parents what to do, especially at a time where many are struggling with the cost of living. And obviously, finance was a big thing that came out. But what I would say to parents is I really encourage them to think about what they can do for free. So there's actually quite a lot that you can do for free. Going out in the rain is maybe not the most fun thing to do, but it's still good for you. It's good for the children. And I think that's another important thing to think about. Like, sometimes when parents were talking, it was almost, I don't want to say it was a chore that they were having to engage with their children, but it was taking them away from other things that they had to do. And they often live quite stressful lives, quite busy lives. So maybe reflect on, actually, it's not just good for your child, but it's also good for you to just have that half hour where you go outside, even if it's raining, you get the fresh air, you go outside, your child is running around, you get some activity as well. So looking at that is quite important. Thinking about maybe reading up a little bit about the risks and the benefits of screen time, for example, and not just assuming that it's beneficial. Same for physical activity. Why do we want them to do physical activity? I think that, from a parent's perspective, would be good. But I also think that we need to consider the policies that are around whatever the government is doing. It impacts on the life of our young ones. You know, I got quite annoyed when I heard parents speak about having to change nursery because the nurseries were taking kids outside, and that's such a basic thing to do. And to me, those behaviors are as important as teaching a child to eat healthily. So you need to start that early, but that comes with policy change, I think, and higher influence that we need to start, reach into, I guess.
So policies around the nursery schools that they're attending to make sure that's part of the requirements that they have at the nursery school?
Yeah, and there is policies in place, but the adherence to those policies is not necessarily monitored that well, or it's not necessarily put in place. That's obviously a bit of a risk. If you have a policy in place, you will have to monitor it, otherwise it's not going to happen. But it's not just the nurseries, it's also thinking about how can the government ensure that parents have the time to actually spend time with their kids, or have options to send them to free clubs so they can be active. It could be just one or two times a week, but it could make a difference for a child and the way they grow up, for sure.
So you have published one paper so far based on the research called Barriers and Facilitators of Physical Activity, Sedentary and Sleep Behaviors in 3 to 4 year old Children from Low-Income Families, a study protocol in the Journal of Activity, Sedentary and Sleep Behavior. So I know because you're finishing up your research, but how else do you plan on sort of getting this information out there by publishing? Or is there anything else you're thinking about with the findings you had?
Yeah, so we presented at another conference as well, other than the Lemini-Vea conference. So that was good. And that was to policymakers. So it was good to get a work out. We are writing up the results, the main results paper at the moment, and the plan is for that to go to BMC Public Health, hopefully at the end of the month, maybe a little bit later. And we will be looking to then have that abstract submitted to one of the international physical activity conferences as well to go and present that there.
Great. I know you'll also be presenting again at our 2024 Lemini-Vea conference. I'm hoping you will.
It's still a while away, no?
That's a long way to go. So what would you change or enhance in the study if you were to conduct it again? Like, what did you learn?
Definitely recruitment. Like, we will probably go into the childcare centers sooner. And like, if we'd done that sooner, we probably could have got into a few more and saved some time, like trying to get the online strategy going. And another thing, like that's more a practical thing, we would have left ourselves some more time between collecting the accelerometry data and then starting the Facebook or the social media activities. We had quite a tight turnaround and then not so reliable posts. So there was a few times where we quite stressed to get those visualizations ready in time for parents to receive it. If we just had an extra week in between that, we wouldn't have been so dependent on the post being on time. So that's definitely a lesson learned for sure.
Would you go back to some of the nurseries, schools that you were able to find participants in and maybe share your findings with them?
Yeah, so we have spoken about that, but nurseries apparently at the moment are quite hard to get into. We are keen to feedback whether or not that's necessarily straight away these results. I would definitely, in the follow-up studies, like, so we're talking about potential studies that are built on this. And if we do get funding for those studies, then we will go back to those nurseries because they were the ones that were quite open. You know, they let us in because they were interested in what we found for sure. But we haven't made any plans, but I might actually talk to my, not RA anymore, but he used to be my research assistant about if we can do that, if he has some time as well as me to go back to these notes.
What's one piece of advice you would give a researcher, you know, working with young children?
Embrace the challenge, like, and enjoy it. So kids are like super fun to work with. Like, I absolutely love it. But you want to make sure you sell the study to the parents, because they, after all, are the ones that will consent to take part. Obviously, you want the kids to be happy, but they are the ones that sign the paperwork, basically. And when I say sell, I mean ensure it's clear why your study is important and what it is that they could gain from it, because it should be a win-win, right? Participating research, like, it's a win for us as researchers. We get new information, valuable information, but it should also be a win for the participants that give up their valuable time. So what do they gain? And we felt, based on the feedback that we got from participants, that they were getting a lot from our study. They were learning a lot, and that was actually really nice. I think that made me more proud, like, not, I can't say more excited than the results of this study, but it did make me quite proud that we were running this as a small study, still making some impact.
Thank you. So thank you, Sana, for talking with us. And thanks to those tuning in. Listeners, if you learn more about the Lumavera Early Career Researcher Grant winner and the great study, we'd appreciate your support by rating and subscribing to the Inviva podcast. This helps us to share these amazing narratives with the research community. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Between the Data. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more about Inviva podcasts and community events, please visit go.invivobyqsr.com/community or email me, Stacy Penna, at s.penna, P-E-N-N-A, at qsrinternational.com.